This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by MM Comfort Systems. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
We got some counties here in Washington State, through no surprise, rolling back into phase number two of Governor Inslee's mitigation policies. What I think is shockingly cowardly in this case is that the governor has decided not to give a press briefing today. He will take no questions today over his decision to roll back Cowlitz, Whitman, and Pierce counties back into phase number two. The state says that those three counties failed to meet both case count and hospitalization thresholds that are required under the updated criteria that the governor changed on Friday. Large counties have to have fewer than 200 cases per 100,000 residents over 14 days and fewer than 5 hospitalizations over 7 days. Now, none of those three counties met either mark, with Whitman seeing the highest case counts at 416 per 100,000 and Cowlitz the highest hospitalization at a rate of more than double the standard to remain in phase number three. Now, hospitalization rates are going up across the board in this state, as are visits to the emergency room for COVID-like symptoms.
This is before you actually have the COVID diagnosis, but it's folks who have the symptoms of COVID. And those numbers are also going up. Looks like it's going up more rapidly among men.
Now, what they don't seem to tell us is how many needed to go to the emergency room due to their COVID-like symptoms. There are a lot of people who choose, in some cases wrongly, to go to an emergency room when they don't need to. And we certainly understand why someone might go, and you should go, obviously, if you feel like you need to. But not everyone who goes to the ER needed to, in fact, go to the ER. Who you just heard there was the Washington Hospital Association CEO, Cassie Sauer. She says there are about 70 more patients hospitalized for COVID this week than last. Now, if we can't, as a state, handle 70 more patients, then we're all in trouble if we can't actually get there. That is a problem if we legitimately can't get there. Now, of course, we can handle it. A lot of this, the state is telling us, Governor Inslee last week was telling us, we're trying to get ahead of any potential surge. Dr. Jeff Duchin from Seattle King County Public Health says the growing hospitalization rate is concerning because what he's seeing is it's in that 20 to 29 year old category.
Over the past week, more 20 to 29 year olds were hospitalized than people over 70. The increasing number of hospitalizations among young adults reinforces that although the rate of hospitalization is low in this group,
yeah,
when COVID-19 is widespread, severe cases will occur even in younger people.
Yeah, it's certainly true that severe cases will go up if there is a surge, but when the number is already very low to begin with and you see an increase in hospitalizations, dare I say, it's certainly not as serious as the 60, 70 plus year old population, which, as you can tell from those comments, are not getting hospitalized because they're getting vaccinated. This is all, in my view, about vaccination. We'll talk about it a little bit later on in this hour because I feel like the messaging on vaccines is being undercut by the very people who are telling you to get vaccinated. I think it's a problem. But in Tacoma, Pierce County, their health department director, Nigel Turner, he's not their director, he's with them. He told Cairo 7 TV that they have to worry about controlling this virus, even in this new phase number two world that they find themselves living in again.
I think really the focus needs to be on, you know, what we can do to, if we go back to two, and
you're in.
Nobody really wants to go back to two.
Yeah, well, you're so there.
Understanding that we need to do what we can to control the disease in our community.
So that's not helpful at all, is it? He's basically saying, we got to control the disease if we're out in phase number two. Oh, okay, thank you. Got it. That enlightens us all. This whole time we thought, to get into phase number three, you didn't have to worry about the numbers increasing.
Yeah, the lack of control promotes you.
But he's saying you do have to control. Uh-huh. So that would explain dum-dums over in Pierce County apparently thought that it was the opposite. It's supposed to go out of control, they thought. Turns out, no, they were supposed to control the numbers.
Great leadership.
Got it. So that, for me, it is ludicrous at a time where you very clearly have more and more and more people getting vaccinated, which means more and more and more people are becoming mostly immune to this, or at least cutting down the severity of the illness if they were to get it, depending on when they get it, to go ahead and revert back to phase number two in any of these counties. Hurting businesses that finally felt like they saw light at the end of the tunnel, and then not having any courage to even do a press conference? How pathetic is that? That is a level of cowardice that even I was a little shocked at. I don't give Inslee a heck of a lot of credit when it comes to standing up and, you know, taking heat for the bad decisions that he makes. Because it seems like as a governor, you're supposed to go ahead and give press conferences when you make major decisions, right? Like, I'm not going to give you points for doing a press conference when you're supposed to do a press conference. But to send a county the size of Pierce back to phase number two and not sit and take any questions to do this via a press release, it's both pathetic and cowardly. And he should be called out for this. You should be called out for this. You know you're going to kill businesses. But this time you don't want to take any heat for it? You've made bad decisions before and you've done press briefings. It's not like you get pressed that hard by the press in Washington State. They don't push you all that hard. So I don't understand why you couldn't sit and take just a few softball questions. Just a few. It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. And that he doesn't see that is weird. And I reached out to the communications director for Jay Inslee, and I said, because when I heard he wasn't giving a press briefing, I was like, that cannot be true. There's no way that that's true. And they're like, no, it's true, Jay. And I said, I was talking to our friend Aaron in our sister station. I said, Aaron, you're a dirty liar. And I slapped him in the face. Slapped him right across the face. It was a backhanded slap.
You did that to Aaron?
Yeah, I was a granola. I go, that you're a dirty liar, sir. And I said, sir, but with like, I was trying to be respectful while humiliating him in public. I slapped him. And he said, I'm telling HR. I slapped him again. And he goes, okay, you know what? This doesn't make any sense. And so I reached out to the governor's office and they said, nope, no press briefing scheduled today. And so I responded, I was like, how about any time this week? No, I got no response back. And so I went to Aaron and I said, you know what? You were wrong. There's a press briefing later today. I lied to him, so I didn't have to apologize for slapping him. So he's waiting for...
Has HR contacted you?
No, because, I mean, I think if he lied to me and got it wrong, I think even he would acknowledge a slap or two is acceptable. I've slapped you for much less.
You have, but you've also instructed me not to go to HR. I think Aaron is going to go to HR, and I don't know if you're going to be able to finish today's show.
Is that her over there?
Don't make eye contact. We got a long...
Is that her over there? Oh, no, that's not her. She's not in.
Better watch out.
Just don't answer any of the phone calls or emails that we get. I'm kidding. I didn't hit him two times.
Look, he's walking by right now. He's looking.
I was just kidding. I didn't hit him twice. I hit him once. Big deal. Ooh, he can. I'm kidding. Shut up. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text when we come back, one man chased down and pinned down an arson suspect. It's time for another edition of Jason Tells the Future. You can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/JasonRants. Anytime I do a Fox News hit, I post a video. On Friday night, I did Fox News at Night. The video is there. Tomorrow morning in the 8 o'clock hour, I'll be on the Faulkner Focus. If you want to watch that again, youtube.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So a man chased down a suspect in an arson, possibly the suspect of all the arsons that we've seen in South Seattle, it's a little bit unclear if they're connected. Now, we know the suspect's name is Kevin Gregory Meyer, M-Y-H-R-E. He's 32 years old. And if he's the guy I found on Facebook, I've got a Jason Tells the Future to go through. We'll get to that in a second. It happened at a construction site that was near an actual residence with people living in it. This is the second time in a week that we've seen this in and around this area. But remember, we did a lot of this last year. Remember when we had almost, I think it was just under 20 arsons in sort of the Beacon Hill area of South Seattle. And we talked about, I think I might have actually done a Jason Tells the Future on this in the past, where it was just a whole bunch of just random arsons. And it was pretty much targeting new construction, new residential construction sites. Well, it's possible that they might have caught the guy who was responsible for all of that. Or I suppose it's just a dude who did it this one time. Or maybe he didn't do it at all. In this case, it happened early Friday morning, happened around 3 a.m. next to this apartment complex.
I got up to use the bathroom, and dude was, I saw the backside of the building flickering. I went out front, saw a dude come out of the gate and chase him down, held him down until the cops got there.
That's the guy. He didn't want to give his information, didn't want to give his name to Cairo 7. I hope he wasn't lying to Deborah Horn, just be like, oh yeah, it was me.
Yeah, it was me. I can't give you a name, but it was me who pinned the guy to the ground.
How do you prove that it was you? Don't want to give my name or information? He said after watching last weekend's fire that pretty much destroyed a multi-unit building that was under construction nearby, he said, I am not going to allow this to happen again, not in my neighborhood.
Let him know how I felt about it.
Yeah.
I told him my grandkid lives there. What's wrong with you?
He wasn't surprised to see someone trying to set another fire.
I've been waiting for him.
That's creepy. He just said, Detective Rance.
Oh, this guy again.
In the first clip, he was all like, I just went to go pee at 3 a.m. That's what I heard.
I got up to use the bathroom, and dude was, I saw the backside of the building flickering. I went out front, saw a dude come out of the gate and chase him down. Held him down until the cops got there.
He's a hero there, right? And yet, he also said,
I've been waiting for him.
He's been waiting for him. Dare I say, the reason why identity is not known is maybe this was a setup. Maybe he's the arsonist, and he is setting up some innocent dude.
I'm sorry, was that your Jason Tells the Future?
No, it wasn't. No, okay. That wasn't it. This is a neighborhood that has been dealing with this for the last 8 months or so. Here's an amateur detective, some random neighbor. She had this to say.
Oh, good. Because I'm certain it's the same person.
She's certain. Detective Karen over there is certain.
Is she actually Karen?
No, I think her name is like Tracy or something.
Oh.
So here's Jason Tells the Future at 3:19 on April 12th. The dude, Kevin Meyer, looks like an Antifa activist. He's just got that look. He looks like an activist. And I am willing to bet, if it is, in fact, the same guy who was responsible for all the other arsons, and this is the serial arsonist, I bet you that the motivation is going to be anti-gentrification. He's going after all of these new units, these new residential units in Beacon Hill, in that neighborhood. And the argument is going to be like, oh, we got to stop this kind of gentrification. It's always the white dudes, by the way, who take that position in the Antifa groups, because they're all heroes, remember. Watch. That's what's going to, if they're able to tie it to, so this is like a Jason Tells the Future with a caveat. It's a little bit of a cheat. But I'm saying, because I haven't looked at the case file yet. Detective Rance hasn't looked at the case in like 8 months.
You don't work with Detective Rance when you're making these Jason Tells the Futures?
No, sometimes we got to separate them out.
Oh.
Soothsayer Jason versus detective. They can't all be in the same. You would think it'd be smart for the detective and the person who can see the future to work together. Because then, boy, you wouldn't have to spend any time trying to solve crime. But Detective Rance likes the puzzle.
Ah, he's old school.
Yeah, he likes the puzzle. He likes to put all the things together, which is unfortunate because sometimes, you know, people get hurt as he's trying to put together all of the puzzle pieces, whereas he could just consult Jason Tells the Future guy and just intervene before the actual crime is committed. But, you know.
Yeah, future guy isn't using his powers as well as he could be. It's like Spider-Man, you know, great power comes with great responsibility. That guy's messing that one up.
No, and I've been trying to get him to just tell me the lotto numbers. He refuses because he's got ethics and morals. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
So there's a California high school English teacher. Her name is Alyssa Pyro. Hey, Pyro.
She's the suspect.
Now I've got a new suspect. Where were you? Oh, you were in class in your home for San Marcos High School. She was caught on a Zoom camera berating students in her classroom for their parents pushing to end remote learning and returning their kids to the classrooms full time. She's heard raising her voice at several of the seniors in her English class at this virtual lesson over Zoom in a video that was filmed by a family member of a student in attendance but was given to Fox News.
Your parent wants to talk to me about their profession and their opinion on their profession. I would love to hear that. I know very little about anything else in the world other than education.
Oh, really? Do you? Because I'm willing to bet that your stupid rant is going to indicate that you know very little about anything, including teaching.
Okay. However, if your parent wants to come talk to me about how I'm not doing a good enough job in distance learning,
and I have this tendency to up-reflect when I'm talking, if they want to talk to me about that,
based on what you need as an individual, just dare them to come at me. Because I am so sick to my stomach of parents trying to tell educators how to do their job. I have never once gone to a doctor's appointment and tried to tell my medical health provider how to treat me.
I'm just kind of curious, when you go see your doctor, do they start to go on a rant about things that are completely unrelated to your visit? Like, do they all of a sudden start to talk about policy with Iran? Do they start to talk about nuclear proliferation when you're coming in just because you want to see them for a rash that you saw on your neck that you were a little concerned about? No? Okay, continue.
You know why?
Why?
Because I know nothing about that. I didn't get my degree in medicine. I am going off. I'm sorry. This is my go-off period.
Oh, it's your go-off period. It's weird because I thought that they were in English class, which is kind of weird because the parents who are saying you're not doing a very good job engaging your kids in English class because you're not in a classroom kind of seems like they've got a point, doesn't it? Lunatic. Kind of seems like they have a point. I swear, if 2020 into 2021 should be remembered for anything beyond simply COVID, I hope people remember what these teachers have been saying and doing. I hope that you're paying attention to what they've been saying to your kids, whether it's all of the video that we've been able to uncover on this show of the propaganda that they're putting in front of your kids that now you have access to, or what they're saying about refusing to go into the classroom. She has no reason not to go into the classroom. By the way, apparently she's got a history of not necessarily being very professional in the classroom, according to the Fox News report. A mother posted on a private Facebook page, according to Fox News, that Pyro had previously taught her daughter at a high-tech elementary school, but that she was eventually fired and appears to have, quote-unquote, gone downhill since then. Yeah, just a little bit. The up-talk stuff is just, we got to end this. Thankfully, Dana Perino's on that. She's been trying to tell young women, stop that, because people don't take you seriously. It's okay for her to say it, though, not me. It's sexist if I were to say it. But Dana Perino's all about it.
Yeah, how dare you, Jason? Please don't get canceled.
It's annoying. Is it not?
It's, like, seriously
like,
annoying.
Like, oh my God? It's so annoying? Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. We're live on this Monday afternoon. The Tacoma News Tribune's Matt Driscoll, who is the state's least interesting columnist, he's out with another hot take, Oh, he's got a lot of them, which is weird because every time I read one of his pieces, it sounds like he was struggling to come up with a topic, and I think he only writes once a week. What in the world is he doing the rest of the week? He writes one column a week. I'm writing almost every single day, doing a three-hour talk show, and doing Fox News almost every single day. He struggles to piece together a column once a week for the Tacoma News Tribune.
Well, Jason, some would say that you have talent.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about Matt.
I know people who lack talent who can fake it better than Matt Driscoll. This is a perfect example of just not knowing what it is you're talking about, but just commit to the cause of talking about something. He is all about trying to get rid of the surge of gun violence in Tacoma, which is, of course, an admirable position to take. None of us wants to see the level of gun violence that we're seeing, not just in Tacoma, but across the country. But as is usually the case, he's got no idea what he's talking about. It's actually shocking how bad his take is here. So he's talking about a story we discussed last week out of Tacoma where the city is trying to tackle gun violence and they're starting with an investment of $25,000 in studies about what causes gun violence. That's, of course, a total waste of money. Now, on that point, Matt Driscoll and I are on the same page. It is not really anything more than spending money for the sake of spending money. Because he effectively is saying, yeah, I mean, it's something, but it is ultimately going to be ineffective. He's correct on that. And as we said last week, we already know what causes gun violence. We know what's at the underlying causes of gun violence in Tacoma. We know. So what should we do, according to Matt Driscoll? Tax guns and ammo like they do in Seattle. That's his solution, or at least a part of his solution. Now, that tax had already been passed. It was supposed to go into effect in July of last year, but COVID happened. COVID postponed it. So now, apparently, it's going to go into effect in July of 2022. Now, he admits that few people think that this will be what he calls the be-all, end-all solution to gun violence. I would argue it's got literally no relationship whatsoever to ending gun violence, a gun tax, an ammo tax. That has literally nothing to do with ending gun violence. But he writes, quote, "But it's something. It's one tiny thing the city can do to play its part or simply send a message." He had just griped about, quote unquote, doing something and sending a message with a $25,000 investment into studying the root causes of violence. He literally, in this column, just chided the council for that, but then immediately says we should go ahead and tax guns and ammo because, quote, it's something. It's a tiny thing the city can do to play its part or simply send a message. He literally contradicts his own stupid talking point that he made sentences earlier. But then he continues, so is that a stand that Tacoma's elected officials are still committed to taking, or have they been effectively scared off? He says, if Tacoma's experience with its gun and ammo tax has taught us anything, it's that trying to address the problem of gun violence without invoking the wrath of lobbyists, zealots, right-wing talk show hosts, and the comment sections of Facebook groups with names like Moms with Machine Guns is impossible. That's reality in America. The sides are entrenched. You have to get dirty to plant a garden. He must have Googled that one. He was like, metaphors for getting hands dirty. Oh, gardening. I'll do that. Does anyone actually think taxing guns or ammo will do literally anything, including the smallest amount, to stop the surge of gun violence in Tacoma? Do you even think it sends the message that you're serious about stopping the gun violence in Tacoma? That's not what a gun tax is about. Why not just come out and say you want to use the tax to effectively discourage law-abiding people from purchasing guns? Why not just say that? why not just say you want another avenue for revenue? And you see law-abiding gun owners as a way to do that. Why not just come out and say that? Because that's the actual goal here. The goal here is to make it onerous to own a gun. To make it so onerous that an individual stops buying the weapon or the ammo. Now, of course, he's the kind of person who will happily stand up against any law that makes it harder to vote. Right? Even when he defines harder to vote as reaching into your pocket and pulling out an ID that you already have. He will, of course, be that guy. But when it comes to Second Amendment rights, folks like Matt Driscoll do not care. Progressive activists do not care about the Second Amendment right. They are selective in your rights that they're willing to support. But looking at the situation, it's not law-abiding citizens who are responsible for the surge in gun violence in Tacoma. It's not. He's got to know that, right? He has to understand that, right? All you have to do is take a look at the actual gun violence, what's going on, and it seems pretty clear where all of this is coming from. Cairo 7, for example, just looked at some of the recent cases, or some of the more high-profile cases out in Tacoma. They looked at a double homicide in June of last year. Witnesses have stalled the investigation by refusing to cooperate with police. What does that sound like? What group do you think is behind that? Law-abiding gun owners who are choosing not to cooperate with a police investigation, or what would you say? Say gang members!
Gang members, Jason.
Oh, that could possibly be it. How weird. They say there was a crowd in the parking lot of South Washington Street when police arrived at 1:45 a.m. and found Johnson, David Johnson, dead from multiple gunshot wounds. Alfred Nelson, 18, was shot dead inside a vehicle blocks away. The shooter or shooters remain at large. Yeah, I'm sure that was just your average everyday gun hobbyist. Hunter. Let's see how it's working in Seattle, where he said, oh, we got to do what Seattle's doing. I swear, Matt Driscoll writes in a way that begs for attention from the Seattle Times. Dude, they do not want you. They have dumb columnists already for them. They already got them working on the paper. They don't need another one. If they do, they're not going to you. Let's see how this tax is working in Seattle. I don't even think there's a gun store in Seattle city limits anymore because they've been run out of town. There might maybe be one still remaining. Maybe one. Q13 points to a shooting over the weekend where four people were shot over near Judkins Park in the Central District. One of the victims was a two-year-old kid. I guess the tax didn't stop it, did it? We also, in Seattle, have a surge in gun violence. So pointing to Seattle as, well, let's see what they're doing. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you look at a city that's not experiencing a surge? You dumb-dumb? Why wouldn't you look at those cities? We don't know what led up to this particular shooting. I'm going to assume it, though, for the sake, it's probably otherwise responsible gun owners. They otherwise follow the law, but in this case, oh, they decided to shoot up a park. Dustin Cole is a first grade public school teacher who was moving into Jackson Apartments nearby when he started to hear the gunshots.
Every day I worry about my students' safety. And I can't imagine being the parent of that child right now.
No one can. No one can. The victims themselves, according to Detective Valerie Carson, they ended up getting themselves to the hospital.
Before any emergency personnel could arrive, the victims all either transported themselves or were transported in personal vehicles to the hospital.
Dustin tells Q13 he wants to know what's going on. Why? Why does this keep happening?
What is the Seattle Police Department doing? What are they doing to protect our community in Seattle, to reach out to the community, to seek support? I have no idea. I have no idea what they're doing. And it keeps happening.
I mean, you could use Google. You can find some of this stuff. And maybe in your research, Dustin, teacher Dustin, Mr. Cole, maybe you'll be able to find out that the SPD is being defunded by a lot of the activists who probably live nearby. They don't have the staff to keep every neighborhood as safe as they'd like. They've been doing what they can. But remember, we don't have the staff to be proactive. We don't have the staff in Seattle to walk streets or bike streets. But despite that, they're doing their best to create some kind of relationship with the community at a time where the community, particularly in the Central District and Capitol Hill, screaming about how ACAB. Maybe they're not taxing enough guns. Maybe they should just increase the taxes on guns and ammo. Maybe that'll help, Dustin. Let's ask our friend Matt Driscoll, that dum-dum. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show. Should we get vaccinated or not? It is a question that shouldn't have to be asked. I know the answer. You really know the answer. We know vaccines don't just get us to that herd immunity point faster, safer, but it also curbs the threat of any COVID-19 mutation. And that's my worry in all of this. The longer we have COVID-19 out there spreading from person to person, the higher the likelihood that it mutates and a new variant becomes the main one, wreaking havoc. That's a problem. Now, the good news is locally, about 40% of Washingtonians over the age of 18 have received at least one dose of one of the vaccines. And yet, we're getting mixed messages on whether or not you should be getting the vaccine, thanks to remarkably dangerous narratives that are undercutting the very demand that we all get vaccinated. The promise of a vaccine isn't just about overcoming the virus. It's got to be more than that. It's about our ability to return to life as we once knew it. And yet we have public health officials and media members sending conflicting messages that end up telling people maybe you shouldn't get the vaccine. We continue to hear claims that even when fully vaccinated, you can't get rid of your mask. You can't go back and eat at a restaurant indoors. In fact, that was a question specifically to Dr. Fauci on MSNBC over the weekend. Can we go indoors and eat at a restaurant if we've been vaccinated?
It's still not okay for the simple reason that the level of infection, the dynamics of infection in the community are still really disturbingly high. Like just yesterday, there were close to 80,000 new infections, and we've been hanging around 60, 70, 75,000. Uh-huh. So if you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated as soon as vaccine becomes available to you. And if you are vaccinated, please remember that you still have to be careful and not get involved in crowded situations.
So your message is, if you can get vaccinated, get it really quickly so that you can not change any of your behaviors. That is your pitch to people who are maybe vaccine hesitant? Or who aren't in a rush to get a vaccine? That's your message? Go get that vaccine so afterwards, nothing changes. That's not good messaging. To tell people that they still have to wear a mask after getting vaccinated, that's not good messaging. To me, it seems like the best way to encourage people to get the vaccine is a promise to normalcy, a return to normalcy. But they are conveying the exact opposite. We have a whole bunch of increased cases in this country driven by otherwise healthy younger Americans, right? It's why, as of yesterday, the death totals were down 26% over the last 2 weeks. The case numbers are going up. The deaths are down. Why? It's because the younger, healthier demographic is returning to this mask-free life, a social life. COVID fatigue is a real thing. And they know that if they get COVID, they're unlikely to die from it. But we, of course, would prefer they not get it. Because if they get it, there is a higher likelihood, the more people get it, that we can see a mutation. But instead of encouraging them to get the vaccine so they can return to their social lives more safely, they're effectively being told that the vaccine makes no difference whatsoever. What sense does that make? Why would this demographic rush to go through the hassle of finding a vaccine appointment, then standing in line for over an hour at a mass vaccination site in the middle of the day if they're told they can make no meaningful adjustments to their COVID-era life after the vaccination? What sense does that make? By all reports, the efficacy of all three of the vaccines, the Moderna, Pfizer, J&J, they're all high, higher than your average flu vaccine. So tell me, what poses the greatest risk, or the greater risk? A vaccinated public being told it's safe to go back to eating at a restaurant, ditching that mask, or an unvaccinated public doing the very same thing that they're already doing now because of COVID vaccine or COVID fatigue? Tell me which one is worse. Tell me which one is better. Tell me which one you would prefer we do and which one you'd prefer we not do. It seems really, really obvious to me. None of this is to say that we should withhold freedoms until people get their vaccines. But I do think that the messaging around this needs to be tweaked. But still, they throw Dr. Fauci out there, who is so inconsistent. At the beginning, I liked the messaging. He seemed to know what it was he was talking about. And I certainly understand that things change. Viruses that you've never dealt with before evolve. And so too will your narrative, your talking points. I get that. But nothing has changed right now. We know what a vaccine does. We know what these vaccines do. I got mine. I got half of mine. Because I want to return to a life of normalcy, and because I don't want to get COVID. Same way I don't want to get a stomach flu. I think the majority of people are in the same exact boat. That's why people get the flu shot. They just don't want to go through and get the flu. So why aren't we being a little bit more clear about the benefits of getting a vaccine? It is maddening to me. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. It's the Jason Rand Show.